from KQED.
This is the California Report podcast. I'm Lily Jamali.
And I'm Ted Goldberg. An independent report looking into the root cause of the largest known methane release in U.S. history has found fault with the Southern California Gas Company. The report, released Friday, calls out the utility which owns the Aliso Canyon storage field for not doing more to prevent the blowout in late 2015. Larry Buell has more from Los Angeles.
An old, corroded pipe casing. That's what led to the massive 2015 blowout at Aliso Canyon Natural Gas Storage Field near Los Angeles, according to the report conducted by Blade Energy Partners. Under high pressure, the casing ruptured, leading to a well blowout. The report also identified 60 smaller leaks going back to the 1970s, and it faulted the owner, SoCalGas, for not investigating or preventing them. In a statement, SoCalGas says, "The new regulations put in place after the leak should prevent this type of incident from occurring again." Around 8,000 residents evacuated their homes in the area during the nearly four-month methane release, some reporting health problems they believe were caused by it. Alex Nagy of Food and Water Watch claims the company can't be trusted to keep Aliso Canyon safe, and she points out that it sits on a fault line.
And we know that if there were to be an earthquake at this field, it could rupture the wells, and there's no emergency response plan in place.
The company says that the facility is needed for the region's energy needs. State regulators allowed Aliso Canyon to reopen on a limited basis in July 2017. There are more than 300 lawsuits ongoing. For the California Report, I'm Larry Buell in Los Angeles.
Today is the last day that Californians can weigh in writing on PG&E's proposed plan to prevent and respond to wildfires. Just last week, the utility's equipment was found officially responsible for the Camp Fire, the deadliest and most destructive wildfire in California history. A year earlier, as the Tubbs Fire swept through Santa Rosa, Will Abrams lost his home. PG&E was not found at fault in that blaze. Abrams is on a personal mission to ensure that PG&E gets its wildfire mitigation plan right. He says the utility filed last-minute changes with the state regulator, the CPUC, that give it a lot more wiggle room by removing inspection deadlines, replacing them with the phrase as is feasible.
What I worry about is that these plans actually increase our risks, because now the next time that there's a wildfire, they can just point to this plan and say, well, you know, we said in our plan, you know, we said we would do it as is feasible and just wasn't feasible at the time. And, you know, sorry, not our fault.
In a statement to the California Report, a PG&E spokesperson said the changes, quote, address certain external conditions that will likely prevent full completion of some targets by the original timelines. Abrams says the problem with that is that the changes don't include specific targets.
State Attorney General Javier Becerra is now releasing records under a new police transparency law on misconduct and shootings involving agents with the California Department of Justice. It took a lawsuit and months of delay, as we hear from KQED's Alex Emsley.
The fight for the information isn't over. Attorneys representing KQED and the First Amendment Coalition are heading into negotiations with the DOJ over exactly which records will be produced and when. Becerra says he'll start turning over some files, though, after a San Francisco judge ordered him to on Friday. Karina Cardenas has been waiting over a decade to learn more about her father's death in San Jose after he was shot by a state narcotics agent in 2004. She thought she'd have that information by now.
At the beginning of the year, we were just so excited for 2019 to hit. We thought we were going to get answers by being able to access records we didn't have the right to access before.
Cardenas says she now has renewed hope that she'll get that long-awaited information. The Department of Justice is still fighting against turning over files it maintains on local police departments, though. The case is due back in court next month for an update on the negotiations. For the California Report, I'm Alex Emsley.
You know, Lily, I want to mention that Alex Emsley and Suki Lewis and other news organizations have really been doing a lot of aggressive work when it comes to forcing police departments and local governments to release some of these misconduct files. I'll also note that this particular angle of the story began when Darwin Bond Graham, many people know he's a former reporter with the East Bay Express. He's now a freelance journalist who does some work for KQED. He put in a public records request with the state attorney general's office. They rejected him. We did did a story about that rejection that led to increased attention on California's top law enforcement officer basically not abiding, some could say, by state law. And here we have the courts basically agreeing with that assessment.
And Ted, I was in Javier Becerra's office last month, and I asked him about this because for the most part, Becerra has gotten really positive press. He has now filed 50 lawsuits against the Trump administration. He is, in some respects, the face of the resistance against President Trump. But this story has not painted him in a positive light. And he will say that once this information is out, it's out. And so he wanted to take his time and get it right.
I think the idea there was if there was some sort of future court ruling that somehow went against all of the other court rulings in this particular instance, that he wouldn't be able to then somehow zip the records back in. And I think that legal argument, obviously journalists, advocates, many journalists just did not buy.
Absolutely. Well, the results from homeless counts show a spike in homelessness in several counties around our state. Orange County saw a 43% rise, and KQED's Hope McKinney reports that here in San Francisco, the homeless population has grown by 17% in the last 2 years.
Despite San Francisco Mayor London Breed adding hundreds of new shelter beds and spending millions of dollars to address homelessness, the new count estimates more than 1,100 people have become unsheltered since 2017. A large part of the increase is from people living in vehicles.
For every one person that we exit from homelessness in San Francisco, three people are becoming newly homeless.
That's Abigail Stewart-Kahn of the city's Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing. She says rising homelessness is a statewide crisis.
We're not able to keep up with the flow of exiting people from homelessness with people becoming newly homeless.
Local advocates say this number is likely an undercount. That's because the federal guidelines used for point-in-time counts exclude some people counted as homeless by San Francisco officials, including people in hospitals and jail. California leads the nation with the highest number of people experiencing homelessness. For the California Report, I'm Hope McKinney.
Well, as Hope just said, in San Francisco, a large part of the increase in homelessness is from people living in vehicles. In the Bay Area, there are pockets throughout the region where RVs and camper vans are lined up day in and day out. For the people who call them home, living there is their way of dealing with the high cost of living in the region. The California Report's Penny Nelson knocked on some motorhome doors.
Arturo Torres is not homeless. He's a commuter. Torres has a family and a home in Fresno, but he works in the Bay Area where he can earn more money.
I'm a painter. The salary on the Central Valley for a journeyman is $18 an hour. Here is $10 or $15 more. It's much better.
During the work week, Torres tried renting a room with other workers, but he was paying more than he could afford just for a spot on the floor to sleep. His next approach was more successful. He bought a motorhome. His is a nice RV that he parks on the street.
This is a 1995 motorhome. When buy this home, I paid $10,000. My monthly payment is $240.
Can you describe your beautiful home? Because it is quite nice.
This truck or motorhome is for six people. It's three beds. This motorhome have a microwave for cooking stuff, a shower.
And how do you get your power?
Right now my power is off because my generator is empty of gas. For take a shower, I need a bucket, 5 gallons. I take the hot water for my job.
You're very tidy.
Yeah. I'm okay here.
Okay, nuts and bolts here. Power. Beyond the generator, his RV has a camping-style setup with propane and battery-operated lights and the like. What about sewage? Well, believe it or not, this is not a challenge. There are RV so-called dump stations all over the place, and for $25, he can dump his RV's load right up the road. Following the rules, though, that is essential when it comes to curbside living.
The police don't give you a hard time as long as you keep everything clean. Everything's good.
Yeah, always. I need to be a good citizenship with no trash, no nothing.
Tomorrow on the California Report, we bring you part two of this RV living series. We'll be talking with city and police officials about what the rules are for living in cars and camper vans. For the California Report, I'm Penny Nelson.
And that's the California Report podcast for this Monday, May 20th, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm Lily Jamali.
And I'm Ted Goldberg. Have a great day.
Support for the California Report comes from Block Construction, a Bay Area builder committed to enhancing communities for almost 50 years. BLACH.com. Energy Upgrade California, urging Californians to keep it golden through simple acts like adjusting the thermostat a few degrees. EnergyUpgradeCalifornia.org. And the James Irvine Foundation, committed to a California where all low-income workers have the power to advance economically. Learn more at irvine.org.